Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, and we're here until 5 a.m. on WGN, and it is Thursday. Get your requests in, Triple Play Thursday, 1 hour, three songs. That's coming up, as well as a bunch of other stuff. So I want to welcome to the studio this morning. She's contributed to the AV Club and the Takeout, a member of the Chicago Film Critic Association, and she's live in studio. And you just heard, we're going to talk about Parts Unknown. Anthony Bourdain Day was Tuesday. It was his birthday. And Allison went through every episode. You went through every episode of every season.
Mm-hmm.
Was that fun?
You know, it wasn't. It was really, I'm not going to lie, it was really hard.
Yeah.
It's a difficult show to watch, I think, under the best of circumstances, because he doesn't pull his punches when he's asking questions.
Yeah.
There are a lot of episodes that are really fun, but there are some episodes that are really difficult to watch.
Yeah.
But definitely rewarding.
Yeah.
And never dull.
Oh, never.
Not a little.
And well, first of all, tell everybody about yourself. Where are you from? How'd you get into writing and all that stuff?
Oh, I grew up in Michigan.
What part?
Grand Rapids.
Grand Rapids.
So the part of the mitten with no fingers in
there. There you go. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I grew up in Southwest Michigan and always wanted to be involved in the arts, and have been really passionate about the arts, and sort of figured out the best way to marry my love of writing with my love of the really incredible things that artists make is to write about those things.
Yeah.
So I sort of transitioned from trying to make the art to writing about the art, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I do, and I love it.
I dated a girl who was from Grand Haven.
Oh yeah,
yeah, and we went up there a couple of times, and then we went to Grand Rapids one night, and there was a place, I guess it's kind of legendary, if you're Mulligan's.
Yeah,
and they have like a Mulligan stew, and it's a drink.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember it knocked me on my butt when I had that, but I love Michigan. I think Michigan's a beautiful place.
It is beautiful.
It was funny because like I dated her, we only dated 7 or 8 months, and we dated mostly in winter, so I never was up there in the summer.
It's not it's always beautiful.
It is,
but it's not particularly, you know, seasonally friendly.
I mean, Grand Haven is nothing but beach, too.
Yeah.
You know, it's like lighthouse and beach, and that's it. So, but anyway, I digress. So you write about just arts in general?
Yeah, I write about, mostly it's film and TV. I've done a little writing about theater, occasionally some other things. And then I also write about food and drink and sometimes sort of tangentially travel for The Takeout, which is the food and drink arm of the Onion AV Club company. So this was sort of the perfect marriage of those things.
Yeah.
And my boss, our editor, Kevin Pang, suggested doing this project. And at the time I was like, well, that sounds really fun. And like, it won't actually be all that challenging.
Yeah.
And you know, 26,000 words later, whatever it was.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm so glad that we did it, but yeah.
Say hi to Kevin for me.
I've had
Kevin on the show when he used to work for the Trib.
Oh, cool.
I had him on the show, and he did a series where all he did was eat cheeseburgers. And I had him on when we were covering that, and he's a lovely man.
Yeah, he's great.
So very cool. All right, well, before we jump into the Bourdain thing,
mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the entertainment stuff you've been writing about. Now, film wise, have you seen anything that you really like this year?
Yeah, I've been sort of in a bit of a lull at the moment because I've been living and breathing Parts Unknown.
Yeah,
but yeah, there are some really great things. Some great things coming down the pipe too.
Yeah.
I really loved Booksmart, which probably I think people, all kinds of people, can't stop talking about.
Yeah, no, it's a terrific movie.
Yeah,
I never knew that that Superbad would be so influential.
Yeah, it's really, it's just very beautifully directed. Olivia Wilde did such a great job. The performances are great.
The
it's
chemistry
so funny.
Between the two leads. Outstanding.
Yeah, Beanie Feldstein is really, I mean, they're both amazing, but
yeah.
Beanie Feldstein, I've been sort of in love with her since she was in Lady Bird, which is also really great.
Yeah, sister of Jonah Hill.
Jonah Hill,
Talented family. Or what else?
There's an Alex Ross Perry movie called Her Smell.
My favorite movie of the year.
Yeah?
My favorite movie of the year.
I think it might be mine, too.
It's hard to describe how much I love Elizabeth Moss.
Oh, she's great.
I adore her. I'm a little disappointed with this season of Handmaid's Tale.
Me too.
First two seasons, amazing. Absolutely amazing. She's still great. I just think the show is spinning its wheels now.
Yeah, I cover that one for the AV Club, too. So I'm covering that every week. And this week's episode in particular, I don't want to spoil it for anyone. It just pretty much just aired. But it was really, really frustrating.
It was. I found... I've kind of found this entire season to be that way. But man, the first two seasons were unbelievable.
Well, and it's still one of the best casts on television.
Incredible. Yeah, the acting is great. But she's having a pretty stellar year. I mean, obviously, she's got that. She's in Us.
And she's got some other things coming, too.
Yeah, and she's in the Kitchen with Tiffany Haddish and Melissa McCarthy, easy for me to say. Which I think looks great.
Well, that is quite a threesome.
Yeah.
That's like, that's a really great top line on a movie.
Yeah, so absolutely.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah, no, but her smell, I was kind of astonished by by the whole thing.
Me too.
Her performance is unbelievable.
Yeah, I think the supporting performances in that film are really great too, but without giving anything away for people who haven't seen it, and please see it, it's really great.
Yeah.
The scene where she's playing the piano, right in my feelings.
It is. Somebody said to me, when they saw, because Eric Childress, you know Eric?
Yeah.
You know Eric, of course. Eric Childress is a contributor to the show, and he has been for many years. We do the Monday Morning Movie Review segment, and he had seen it. He also covers the film festivals for us, because he goes to Sundance and he does other places. And I can't remember what festival he saw it at, but he saw it, I think it was Sundance, and he saw it, and because he knows my love of Elizabeth Moss, and he goes, not only is it a great movie, I have a feeling, he goes, Nick, I predict that I have a feeling that it'll be the first time you've ever cried at a Bryan Adams song. And I said, and then after I saw the movie, I'm like, you were right. You were right. It is such just such an incredible. And have you seen Midsommar? I haven't seen it yet.
No, not yet. Oh, I'm very
so excited.
I really liked Hereditary.
Me too.
And I also really like Florence Pugh, who's one of the leads in that. And I'm very excited.
And I like that damn wrestling movie she was in earlier this year.
I missed it, but I heard really great
Fighting
things.
With My Family. Yeah. I thought it was really good.
She's been in a couple of really great things.
Yeah,
if you haven't seen Lady Macbeth, she's good in that.
She's great. She's a terrific actress. Mm-hmm. What about TV outside of Handmaid's Tale? What kind of stuff on TV are you liking?
Oh, well, my favorite show of the year so far is Fleabag.
It's so good.
I know.
She's unbelievable. She's amazing.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible talent. I also really loved Russian Doll. I love Russian Doll so much that I recently went out and got the Russian Doll bangs, which I'm still adjusting to.
Yeah.
Russian Doll on Netflix, I think, is really great.
Yeah.
I liked the third and final season of Jessica Jones more than most people.
That's not a show that was on my radar.
It's Kristen Ritter is just really great. Is the lead in that and sort of a nice ending to the Marvel chapter of Netflix. And, so that's great. All kinds of things.
What about Baskets? Do you watch Baskets?
Yeah. You know, I'm a little behind on Baskets. I haven't started watching this season yet, but
I
sort of fell in love with that one right off the bat.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I wish Atlanta would come back on, because I think that's one of the greatest shows ever.
I think we'll have a bit of a wait for that one.
FX is doing some great work.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, like the Fosse Verdon thing was terrific, and What We Do in the Shadows is really funny.
Yeah.
They're doing some quality stuff at FX.
That episode of What We Do in the Shadows where they have the circle of the vampires?
Ridiculous.
Oh, amazing.
Well, every cameo topped each other, and it was great. I thought that, did you see the final episode of the season?
Yeah.
That little twist that they give Guillermo at the end with his DNA test, I just think is brilliant.
Yeah.
And it adds like a whole new direction that the show can go into in the next season.
Totally.
But man, that cast is great. Why am I blanking? Natasha. What's her last name? I can't remember her last name. But the female lead in that show destroys me.
Oh, she's so good.
She's so funny.
I saw that cast at the Television Critics Association press tour.
Oh, sure.
And they were all really amazing and funny, as you'd think, and they have great chemistry. But the guy who plays Guillermo, I had a conversation with him where he mentioned that when he went into audition, he was like 20 years too young for the part. So he just thought, well, I have to do something to compensate. So he went out to a thrift store and bought that sweater that he wears in the pilot, and got these glasses and did something to his hair, and then went in and then played it the way that he did. And so they were like, we want to cast you, but also can you please bring in that outfit because we want to use that outfit.
Oh, that's great.
So, isn't that fun?
That's hilarious.
So he costumed his way into a role.
That's really cool. So originally 20 years younger.
Oh yeah, he was supposed to be, that character was supposed to be considered
20 year old. Oh, wow. Oh, I think Guillermo's fantastic.
The character is
great.
Yeah.
So, anyway, lots of fun writing about this stuff. Movie wise, real quick, what are you looking forward to the most?
Oh, gosh, I have no idea.
I mean, for me, immediately, it's Midsummer. That's
yes. Oh, well, that in the immediate future, yeah. I'm really excited about that. I'm also, I'm assuming the social embargo listed. As I was on my way over here, I started seeing the first tweets about Spider-Man Far From Home.
Yeah.
Which I liked the most recent Spider-Man movie a lot more than I expected to. And it looks like the response to this one is pretty positive.
Yeah.
I'm very excited about Jake Gyllenhaal as, like, over the top.
Me too. Me too.
Marvel mode. I'm very
into that. In a field that's obviously overcrowded, like, I mean, every week a comic book movie comes out, mm-hmm. and some of them are really great, and some of them are Dark Phoenix. But I'm looking forward to this one. I think, you know, I didn't think that we were going to need another Spider-Man after the Andrew Garfield fiascos that came out, but yeah. Homecoming was good.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So, and I was watching, I can't remember which late night show it was on, but Tom Holland is making the rounds,
mm-hmm.
and he was on, and he was telling it was Colbert. He was on Colbert, and he was telling Colbert that like the first movie was called Homecoming, and it was shot, you know, in America. The second one is called Far From Home, and it was shot in London, about 10 minutes away from where he lives. so I thought that was kind of interesting.
That's cool.
I also love the fact that Tom Holland is so guilty of. On the press tours of they don't let him talk because he's Mr. Spoiler.
Right.
He gives everything away. So anyway.
He can sure lip sync though. Have you seen that? Have you seen him doing Umbrella?
Oh, it's great.
He's very, very good.
I think he's very talented. Yeah. I like him a lot, and I think he's great as Peter Parker.
Me too. So.
All right, Allison, it's great to talk to you, and we're going to take a break for the news. When we come back, we'll dive into the parts unknown.
Great.
All right, cool. Allison Shoemaker is with us. She is a contributor to the AV Club and Takeout, and she watched every single episode of every single season of Anthony Bourdain's great show, Parts Unknown. And we're going to dive into that after we take a break for the news, which is coming up right now. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Coming up after 2 o'clock, Tara Handren is going to join us. She's a terrific actress that I had the pleasure of directing in a show a bunch of years ago at The Factory. And she is a performer and a writer of her own. She's got a one-woman show that she calls Drunk with Hope, and she tours around with that. And she works at a place called Karen Treatment Centers. And the show itself is about addiction, and we're going to talk about that and her show and touring and all that cool. And I'll get to catch up with her. I haven't seen her in a really long time. Well, I'm not going to see her because she's going to be on the phone, but I'll get to talk to her. So that's coming up here on WGN. Right now, though, I would like to welcome back to the studio Allison Shoemaker, contributor to the AV Club and the Takeout. And welcome back.
Thanks.
Okay, so Anthony Bourdain. Let's talk a little bit about just him first before we dive into this. I love Anthony Bourdain, loved Anthony Bourdain, and was like really, really devastated when I heard about his death. And the thing that I love most about I've read two of his books. I read Kitchen Confidential. Oh, and I read three of his books because I read Medium Raw and A Cook's Tour. So I loved his shows, plural, like No Reservations and all that mm-hmm. stuff, and then Parts Unknown and all of that. But I just, what I loved most about Anthony Bourdain, besides the fact that he was just a badass in general, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Was his attitude about traveling, embracing the people around you, learning from everything that you do and eat and taste and smell in these places. And he was a terrific writer as well. And I just, and obviously a great personality and a great chef. So, and he puts all that into his show. So are you a fan?
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. I also read and loved Kitchen Confidential. And I really loved No Reservations. I like even The Layover, which he apparently did not care for. I like The Layover. I like Cook's Tour.
Yeah.
I just love him as a writer, obviously. And I think the show is really special. So when Kevin had this idea to sort of try to tackle all of it, I was like, yeah, okay, that sounds really fun. And it was really great. But I sort of mentioned this before, when you sit down with even just a single season of that show, it becomes apparent just how willing he was to have really difficult conversations. So it is emotionally grueling without the added context of his loss. And I've had a lot of people, when I mentioned that I was working on this, would say, I don't know how you could do that. I don't think I'll ever be able to watch Parts Unknown ever again.
Yeah.
And I understand that instinct. I think that there are places to sort of re-enter and you can kind of acclimate yourself to the sadness.
Yeah.
But I do think it's still really worth watching because I've seen it, you know, almost every episode twice, many of them more than twice, at least in pieces, you know, as I was working on all of it. And I get something new out of it every time. And you start to pick up themes and the ways that the episodes sort of reflect and work in concert with each other. And you see patterns emerge and habits. And like, he really liked to describe beautiful water as gin clear. And that's not a thing that I would know if I hadn't sort of immersed myself.
Yeah.
In this world. So, it was just like an incredible experience.
I have not gone back and rewatched any of the shows. I'd be able to, I think, but there would be a real pang of sadness while I watched it. No, I mentioned Kevin again, of sadness watching it because I admired him so much and I liked him so much. And it was such a shock when he died. I don't think anybody expected that. And then you find out it's suicide and it's just very, very sad. But, you know, one of the things that I love so much about the shows that he did was his the stuff that he wrote for the voiceovers was always my favorite part of the show. Was just like his observations, the voiceovers, so beautifully written, and you know, so like genuinely delivered. That was some of my favorite parts of each episode were that.
Yeah, he was rightly nominated for several Emmys for writing for that show and won some.
Yeah.
There's a beautiful section at the end of the Houston episode, which is one of my favorites. That was one that we put in our top 10. We had a 20 essential episodes
list. I got
list.
That right in front of
me. Houston is in the mix there. At the end about how it's basically a response to Make America Great Again as an idea that ends with "Welcome, stranger, this land is your land," and it just it's just beautiful. He's incredible. Was an incredible writer.
Yeah.
But the words are forever, you know?
Yeah, no, they are.
The writing
they
remains are. Incredible.
No, there's no question about it. And to have him write about something like that, you know, like "You're Welcome" and all this crap that's happening right now in the news, you watch that now and I'm sure it had an even bigger impact while watching it. How many episodes total and how many seasons was Parts Unknown on?
So Parts Unknown was on for 12 seasons.
Oh my God.
Yeah, 95 episodes, which excludes many of the seasons had an episode that you'll see, like if you're in IMDb or on Wikipedia, called Shortcuts or Prime Cuts. Maybe it's Prime Cuts, which are just clip shows, basically, which you can skip. But other than that, it was 8 episodes per season, with the exception of the last season, which was 7. And in the last season, there were 5 episodes, as we sort of would recognize them, although very different, because only one has what you assume is the final Bourdain narration. The rest have sort of bits and pieces. And then 2 specials, one called Under the Tarp, which is invaluable, just really, really worth watching, in which the people who made the show with him talk about their experience of making it very candidly. It's often really funny, really sad. They don't sugarcoat anything. You know, they talk pretty openly about how he could sometimes be difficult.
Yeah.
And then there's also an episode called Bourdain's Impact, where some sort of luminaries, critics, talk about his impact on television and his impact on travel and travel writing and food writing. And that's also good. But Under the Tarp is great.
So really now, great. What were some of the stories that were most memorable about the crew talking about Bourdain?
There are 2 that really stand out. One, they were doing, I think it was one of the Vietnam episodes, and they were supposed to do this really brief segment where they walk into this chain to buy an egg salad sandwich, which is one of his very favorite things on the planet. And the producer who was assigned to make sure there was a sandwich went in and didn't notice that it was half egg salad, or like egg salad with potato, egg salad and bacon, something. It was not the right sandwich. So they go in and he's looking at the shelf and bantering like he does, and it's not there. So they have to stop, and the producer has to go in search of another sandwich at another location. That one is really fun and funny, and also you can tell it was very tense, but but they had a good time with it. My favorite, though, is they were shooting one of the dinner scenes, and Bourdain sat down across from whoever his dining companion was. And as they sat down, he looked up and noticed that there was a light already hanging that the team had come in advance to pre-hang this light so they could move quickly. Mm-hmm. Basically, they were doing two locations back to back with almost no gap in between, and they had planned enough that the light was there when they arrived.
Right.
And he was like, oh, look, they've got a light for us already. That's great. And his dining companion said, yeah, it seems like you have a really amazing crew here. And he said, ha, well, don't pet the baby unless it's sleeping. And they all told this story and just laughed because, like, of course he knew he had an incredible crew, but, you know, never pet the baby unless it's sleeping.
Yeah.
That really made me laugh.
That's
There's also
funny.
A very interesting segment where the person doing the interviewing asks all of the people who were being interviewed for the show whether or not the experience was fun. And each and every one of them says no without hesitation. And then they say, go on to say it was incredible, but no, like, no, you're sailing down the Congo River. You're like worried about getting arrested, and you're worried about this and that, and you're eating food that gives you some real digestive problems and not sleeping and 18-hour travel days and all of that. Of course, it wasn't fun, and that doesn't mean it was an incredible experience. Yeah. So, yeah, that Under the Tarp is really, really worth watching.
Does anybody talk about Bourdain's alcohol consumption during the episodes? Because he drinks a lot.
He does drink a lot.
Yeah.
And he eats a lot. When you think about the number of meals that he has to have in a day to make that show work. And then, of course, those meals are all presumably 45 minutes long, and we're only seeing a little bit of them.
Yeah.
Kevin did a really great interview with Tom Vitale, who's the he directed 39 episodes of the show and produced many more, where he was talking about how the conversation that Bourdain and Barack Obama had in Hanoi was long, and they talked about almost nothing for almost all of it. And the clip they were able to use is actually just right at the end. They got into a conversation that was going to be usable. So you think, like, he would sit down at a table and then talk and eat for an hour, and then they'd go to another place for him to sit and talk and eat, and they'd go to another place to sit and talk and eat.
Yeah,
so,
that's a lot.
It is
that's
a lot.
I'm a big fan of Top Chef, and when I watch it, I always think about how much food the judges have to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had chefs on from Top Chef winners in the past, and you know, like, I had a couple, and they really do eat all that food. It's ridiculous. How many meals that the judges have to eat,
mm-hmm.
Especially when, you know, very early in the season when all the chefs are still there. I think to myself, I'm like, how do you eat like 8 full meals? And I just, it's kind of amazing to me.
I read this amazing anecdote where Paul Hollywood of the Great British Bake Off told somebody, some reporter, that Prue Leith, who's his new co-judge, takes home some of the leftover bakes and gives them to her pigs. So, like, if they don't finish it, she takes it home and she gives all the beautiful baked goods to her pigs.
That's fantastic. That is fantastic.
Yeah.
How many Chicago episodes? There's one Chicago episode
Chicago episode.
And where does he go on that one?
You know, it's sort of centered on the Old Town Ale House. They go some other places as well. Mostly on, not entirely on the South Side, but mostly on the South Side. They also go to Longman and Eagle, which is cool. But they return to Old Town Ale House again and again and again.
Right.
It feels like the show is attempting to kind of recreate the Old Town Ale House's legendary blog. So they do interviews with people using the nicknames that they have on the blog, and it's great. It's
good. I remember that episode. I'm trying to think of a friend of mine actually cooked for him. He cooked for Bourdain. Him and Mancow were in an episode together. I think it was No Reservations. And they went to the restaurant next to the Matchbox.
Oh.
And my friend Tony Mata is the chef there, and he made Bourdain like this pork monstrosity burger that he put together, and he got, you know, an incredible, you know, complimentary review, and he was on top of the world. You know, you cook for Anthony Bourdain and he's like, this is great.
Yeah.
You go, oh man. Bourdain loved the big stuff too. Like, this thing was massive. It had pulled pork, it had a pork, you know, it had pork burger, it was just every kind of pig that you could possibly imagine piled on top of a, you know, on top of a bun. And of course, you know, he ate it all up and loved it. And Tony came out to the table you know, to talk to him and stuff like that. So he's in the episode.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So it was very, very cool. But that was not Parts Unknown.
Yeah.
I want to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about your favorite episodes.
Great.
Okay, cool. All right. Allison Shoemaker is here. She's a contributor with the AV Club and The Takeout. Anthony Bourdain Day's birthday was a couple of days ago. So she watched every single episode of every single season of Parts Unknown. And we have the 20 essential episodes of Parts Unknown that we are going to talk about as well. And we'll do that right after this break on 720 WGN. Is that the Stones?
Yes.
Were they in town recently? I didn't hear.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
I wish they would have got some publicity for the Stones while they were
here.
I know,
they're such a great small band.
Oh, my God. Independent bands, they need help. Coming up after 2 o'clock, Tara Handren is going to join us. She's an old friend of mine, and she has written and she performs a show called Drunk with Hope, which she tours around. It deals with alcoholism and addiction, and she's also a terrific actress, and I had the pleasure of directing her years ago in a show. So that's coming up. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right now, let me welcome back to the studio Allison Shoemaker. Welcome back, Allison.
Thanks for having me.
Contributor to the AV Club and The Takeout. Is there a website that people can check out?
Yeah, it's thetakeout.com.
Thetakeout.com. Is that simple?
Yep.
Okay, cool. We are talking about you diving headfirst into every episode of Anthony Bourdain's Parts Unknown, but you did narrow it down to 20 essential episodes. What are some of the essential episodes that you think and why?
Well, I mean, the first thing that I should say is that our short list was like 65. And again, there are 95 episodes,
yeah.
So I did a very bad job of narrowing it first. I tried really hard to cheat, to like have ties and expand it to 30, and finally we just thought, no, that's silly, and we narrowed it down. You know, it's a group of episodes that's sort of all over the map. We tried to pick things that are a little more mournful and some things that are pretty challenging. We picked one, Sicily, which he considered an abject failure. In that episode, he's supposed to go diving for octopus, and he's under the water.
I remember that. Sees
dead octopus floating through the water because his fixer has decided to just, you know, go shopping and toss the seafood into the water for him. And he sort of spirals and spends the afternoon drinking Negronis while his crew is trying to salvage the episode. So that's in there. We tried to span the globe, all kinds of things.
Yeah.
The top slot went to an episode we've already talked about, which is Hanoi, the episode that's best known for being the Obama episode, but which does a lot of other things. And I think that one is really, really special.
And I like that you point out a key scene for each episode. Mm-hmm. Was it easy to pull those from the episodes?
It was hard to not pick too many.
Yeah.
The easiest to sort of narrow down in terms of picking a specific scene was the Charleston episode, which is just outside our top 10, which has my favorite scene from any of the episodes.
What is that?
It is when Bourdain and Sean Brock, the chef that he follows on the show, on that episode, go to the Waffle House. And Bourdain has never been to the Waffle House.
Oh, my
God.
So
he's being introduced to the Waffle House by someone who's been going his whole life and just falls in love with it.
Yeah.
Just has this incredibly joy. And it's very vulgar. It's a very vulgar scene, which is one of my favorite Bourdain modes. He could curse like a champion.
Yeah, oh, no question
just like
about
a,
it.
Like a world-class deployer of...
Yeah. Have you ever been to a
language.
Waffle House?
I have.
Oh,
it's
God.
Been years, but yeah.
Oh man, I went down to Nashville. I dated a girl who was from whose parents lived outside in Franklin, Tennessee. So we went down to Nashville, and she's like, "I'm going to introduce you to the Waffle House," and I was blown away.
Yeah.
It's the best.
Yeah.
It's the best.
Well, that's how he felt too. He said that it made him want to get up on the counter and and I think it was something like sing "I'm proud to be American" or salute or something.
Yeah.
And "I doubt I'd be the first" was the end of the line. That's an incredible scene.
That's really great. Well, now where can people see Parts Unknown?
You have to sort of look around. So I was able to watch it. Seasons 7 through 11 are currently on Netflix.
Okay.
When we started the rewatch, I was on a plane flying. I think to California, and had downloaded season 7 onto my tablet or phone or whatever it was. And so the first episode I watched during the rewatch was Manila, which might be my personal favorite, even though it's not number 1. It is in the top 5.
Yeah.
And I was just weeping on the plane, just openly weeping. That episode is so beautiful. But you can watch 7 through 11 on Netflix. And then CNN has most of the episodes available through their app. I was able to watch all of them through my cable's on-demand system.
Yeah, yeah.
CNN does have a couple of episodes that they pulled, but you can see most of it through their app or through CNN.com.
And go to thetakeout.com, and you can, if you want to use a guide here, we have the 20 essential episodes of Parts Unknown, and it's up right now. And you can check it out. And if you've never seen an Anthony Bourdain travel show, if you've never seen Parts Unknown, you have to.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really just an incredible experience. He was an incredible man. Yeah. And everything about those episodes, he was like, he always wanted to learn something and participate. And, you know, a lot of people travel and they don't care. And they don't, you know, he wanted to learn everything about the culture that he didn't know about. And it was, you know, you could feel that in every frame.
Sometimes he wanted to push back against incorrect ideas about a place.
Yeah.
He went to West Virginia to sort of deconstruct the stereotypes that we make about people who live in rural areas. He went to Houston and focused exclusively on communities of color. So it's, you know, there are no cowboy hats. There's no barbecue in the sense that we think of it.
Yeah.
Instead, he goes to an Indian grocery store, and he it's a great episode. He went to Detroit. That one's very near and dear to my heart as a Michigander.
Sure.
To sort of talk about what happens when an American city starts to die and everyone just acts like that's okay. It's just, or he went to New Jersey, his home state.
Yeah.
To push back against the notion that it's not an incredibly wonderful and beautiful and magical place. So he went in the dead of winter as if to make it as difficult for himself as possible to convince people. Right, and he does a really great job of it.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
All right. So that's all available. Check out the article at thetakeout.com. A couple of other quick things that I wanted to mention here. Patton Oswalt is a hot dog, a sandwich. Let's talk a little bit about that. First of all, I adore Patton Oswalt.
Me too.
I think he's the best. First of all, the legendary bit that he did about the famous bowl, the fried chicken famous bowl, is one of the greatest things ever. And he does one of my favorite. I mean, I adore him. I adore everything he does. But one of my favorite things that bits that he ever did was about the Star Wars prequels, and that he would kill George Lucas. That is one of the funniest things I ever. So I love the guy. But you talk to him about the eternal question. Is a hot dog a sandwich?
Yeah, that's a series that we do at The Takeout that's mostly me. And usually it'll be that I'm talking to somebody for some other interview and we just throw it in there at the end. But every once in a while, somebody will just talk to me about that. For example, next week, we're running Joey Chestnut, who is the champion hot dog eater.
Yeah.
So he just talked to me about whether or not a hot dog was a sandwich.
That was the entire interview.
The documentary about competitive hot dog eating that 30 for 30 is releasing.
Right.
But he was very nice about that question. Some people don't want to answer it because they think it is stupid. I'm not sure that they're wrong. But he was very game. Patton was very game.
And did he come up? Did he think a hot dog was a sandwich, or did he say no?
He said no. But if you break the seam on the hot dog, then it becomes a sandwich.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it was for him. It was all about the seam. That's a common answer.
Yeah, that seems to be like it. Yeah,
because one side is closed, it can't be a sandwich. A sandwich has to be open on four sides.
Okay, now where do you stand on this debate?
Oh, I am firmly neutral. I don't think I could do my job if I had an opinion. People always ask me, and I say, I don't, you know, I don't know. I have no idea.
Okay.
I think they're delicious. How about that? And I don't think you should put ketchup on them.
I've said this a million times. If you are over the age of 5 and you put ketchup on your hot dog, you should go immediately to jail.
That's what Obama says. They talk about in Hanoi, they talk about putting mustard and ketchup and all kinds of things on hot dogs.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right. Mountain Dew created a soda designed to pair with KFC's original recipe chicken. What in God's name's happening here?
You know, we get a lot of emails from brands. In this case, they basically decided to do the Baja Blast thing. If you've ever had Baja Blast, that was created for Taco Bell initially. So this is a very special, I think, sort of sweet tea-influenced Mountain Dew that was created for KFC. I don't know. It's silly.
Yeah. Well, all right. I don't do the caffeine, so I don't know what any of that stuff
Tastes like sugar water.
Yep, sure it does.
And looks like no color found in nature.
Wow. Well, you know what? It's been so much fun talking to you.
Oh,
you should come. You should come back again soon.
I would love to.
Yeah, and we can talk about some of the stuff you write for AV as well.
Sure. Yeah.
And what do you got coming up? Anything? What else can we look for? Writing wise.
Well, you know, I write for The Takeout most days. News. Sometimes we're working on a story right now about which classic cocktails you can turn into snow cones. I think that's going to be really fun.
Okay.
And then I'm covering The Handmaid's Tale weekly. I've got some other things sort of percolating there, but the TV schedule changes so fast.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've got some other non-review things coming out about Handmaids as well.
Okay, cool.
Interviews and stuff.
Cool. Allison Shoemaker, a real pleasure.
Thanks. Thank you so much for having me. A pleasure for me as well.
So much fun. Contributed to the AV Club and The Takeout. Go to thetakeout.com, and you can watch Parts Unknown with Allison as your guide. Okay. All right, we'll take a break. We got the news coming up next.